Welcome to Banfield, the many faces of Brian Laundry, the world's best forensic artist, will show us what he might look like today. And a side of Brian that only his parents got to see. Did Brian's mom and dad know ahead of time that Gabby wasn't coming home? And later, if you know who killed Paul and Maggie Murdoch, time is running out to cash in. Tonight's the deadline for information that could earn you $100,000. And guess what? That wall of silence in the Lowcountry? Well, it is breaking tonight on Banfield. Welcome to Banfield. A number of major discoveries today in the manhunt for Brian Laundry. But first, some brand new body cam video, a very different angle from that domestic dispute in Moab that's been so heavily scrutinized. For the first time, we hear Gabby herself describe being hit by Brian Laundry and then telling police that she hit him first.
And his reaction was to do what? He just grabbed you?
Yeah.
Did he hit you though? I mean, it's okay if you're saying you hit him, and then I understand if he hit you, but we want to know the truth if he actually hit you.
I guess, but I hit him first.
Where did he hit you? Don't worry, just
well,
be honest.
He grabbed my face, like, I guess. He didn't hit me in the face. He didn't punch me in the face or anything.
Did he slap your face or what?
Well, he grabbed me with his nail, and I guess that's why it was. I definitely have a cut right here because I can feel it.
Yeah.
Touching it burns.
Okay.
We know this. 2 weeks later, that young woman would be dead. Back in Florida this afternoon, the FBI was back at the Laundry home, but according to the family lawyer, only to look for personal items that they could use to help search for him. Curious, though, the feds were not asking his parents nicely for a sweater smelling like Brian. They moved in with purpose, searching inside and outside the house and focusing a lot of attention on that white camper top parked out in the driveway, going right into it. It's the same small camper top that Brian and his parents used when they went on that mysterious camping trip right after Brian returned home without Gabby. And how's this for a shocking revelation? Documents connected to that campground show that Brian's mother may have known back in August that Gabby was not coming home with Brian. How could she have known that then? And speaking of prior knowledge, we have just learned the police have been called to the Laundry home 46 times this month, including two calls that were placed the day before Gabby Petito was declared missing. And one of those calls involved Gabby Petito's father, Joe. So much to discuss. Fortunately, News Nation's Brian Enten is with us from outside the Laundry home. Brian, let's first start with that very interesting FBI visit. I know that the lawyer for the Laundry family said they were only there to get something smelly so that the dogs could help in the search for him. But every time I've been at a missing person story, they don't walk in and look for things themselves in a camper. They get things nicely handed over by the family. And that did not look like the purpose that they had today when they went there. Characterize that visit for me.
Yeah, basically what happened just after 1 o'clock this afternoon, the black SUV, which we've seen before, the FBI SUV pulls right up here next to the dad's red truck. You've got two agents that get out, a male and a female agent. They go right to the front door. They go inside and they're holding this big brown paper bag that looks very, very full, almost like a supermarket paper bag. They bring it in. We never see that again. So that paper bag stays in the house. They're inside for maybe 10, 15 minutes. And then they come back out and they go into the camper. They go into the back of the camper. They open the back door. They go inside and they have this small cylinder plastic bottle that they put something inside, put the lid on top. They come out, they go back into the SUV, and then they're gone. The entire thing took about 30 minutes.
How is this any different than just the other day? They came to get what was characterized as a DNA sample, which is more bizarre because it was just left out on the porch for them. Like, chain of custody was not an issue when they came to pick up, you know, that thing a few days ago. And here they are going into the camper by themselves. Notice how the laundries aren't with them. Notice how the agents are going into the camper on their own. That's not how you go and ask for a nice piece of clothing for your bloodhounds to find your missing son. That's how police go and get things so that they can search for a fugitive. That's a very different purposeful search I'm looking at.
So a few interesting things that I noticed. I mentioned they went in with that big brown paper bag that was full and they didn't come out with it. We're assuming that may have been the things that they took of Brian's the other day. Possibly they've done the testing. They're returning those things now to the home. We haven't seen them go into the camper since that initial search warrant. And it's interesting that they're now suddenly very interested in the camper after what we've learned about this camping experience that the laundries had after Gabby went missing. So perhaps this new piece of evidence they took from the camper is important now that they know about the camping trip.
So let's talk about the camping trip, Brian, because the documents don't seem to square up with what looks like an innocent trip that was, you know, thought up when their son Brian suddenly came home from a, I don't know, months-long camping trip. That's odd in itself. But the documents now show that Roberta, the mom, Roberta Laundry, made a reservation back on August 24th, but that was supposed to be for a camping trip on September 1st through 3rd. And then we come to learn that on August 31st, and the reason that date's important is it's the day before her son returned back to Florida without that beautiful fiance, Gabby. So on the 31st, she changes the reservation. And instead of two people, mom and dad, she makes it three people, maybe mom, dad, and Brian. But where's the fourth person, Gabby? Again, this is the 31st. It's the day before Brian gets home. Right? His license plate cleared on September 1st. So is it now the speculation that Mrs. Laundry knew that Brian was coming home without Gabby?
Well, we don't know, but it's certainly very strange. And you have to wonder, when they went on this camping trip, were they not talking to Brian about where is Gabby? Was there not some kind of discussion? Why did you come home in Gabby, your fiance's van, but there's no fiance? The other interesting thing about the campsite and the camping trip is this. You know, we first heard about this from Dog the Bounty Hunter earlier this week, and a lot of people were saying, well, maybe the FBI knew about this a week ago. Maybe this is old news and we just didn't know because it's not public. But listen to this. We found out today that the FBI did not get the surveillance video and request the surveillance video from the campsite until Tuesday of this week, which is after Dog the Bounty Hunter went public with his lead about the campsite.
So clearly Dog the Bounty Hunter knows how to find missing people. That's, you know, we've known that for years, right? We've been watching him catch guys for years. So that is interesting that maybe, just maybe, the police are finding out things from press and TV stars. I mean, it is possible, right? There's a lot of ground to cover in this case. I want to ask you about that really bizarre report about the 46 different 911 calls related to that little yellow bungalow behind you. And what I thought was really interesting was that they would only release the calls starting on September 10th. And they only would give the calls to the responding outlet until September 27th, heavily redacted, and no reason as to why a wider window wasn't given when a wider window was requested. But walk me through the really remarkable piece of information there about the 911 calls.
Yeah, we got the full report list today. And when you say heavily redacted, I wish I had them printed out. I'd show you. I have them on my computer. But, I mean, it's just like a big black box for the most part for the narrative. So we don't know much about these calls. But what we do know is that the more recent ones are likely connected to the laundries inside the house making calls because of the protesters outside. We know that when Dog the Bounty Hunter pounded on the door, they called the police and said there's bounty hunters outside our house. So the ones that are more recent sort of make sense. It's really the the ones around the time that Gabby was reported missing that are more interesting. There were two calls on September 10th, the day before Gabby went missing. What we learned and confirmed through email tonight with Northport Police is those calls are related to the Petitos themselves calling in and trying to make a missing persons report with Northport Police. This is where it also gets interesting, though, Ashley. Northport Police say there was a back and forth because they didn't want to initially take the missing persons report because Florida law says you need to file the report in the state where the person went missing, which would have been Wyoming or Utah at that time. And there was just a lot of back and forth between the parents and police.
Well, that would make sense for the 10th, but I wonder why they wouldn't give out the records for the 9th or the 8th or maybe September 28th, 29th, because, you know, we've been zeroing down, Brian, on that timeline to September 27th, which really looks like it might be the day that Gabby died, given the movements that all the social media stars have been able to pinpoint. And now we can't get those records after the 27th. I find that fascinating. Maybe we'll learn more about that. There is something else that happened today that I'm trying to, you know, wrap my head around, Brian. The lawyer for the laundries in that house behind you, he says, let's correct the date of the purchase of the new phone. Brian Laundrie bought a new phone. Everybody'd been told he bought it on the 14th, the same day he took off. And that's not what the lawyer's saying now. What's the new story?
So this is interesting. Mr. Bertolino, the lawyer for the laundries, when he first start, he does a lot of texting. A lot of these statements from him come from text messages, and he texts different reporters different things, which, you know, is kind of unusual. I mean, a lot of times these lawyers will have sort of a prepared statement. They'll copy and paste it, and they'll send it to everyone. That's not the way it's really been working with this attorney. So you never really know what you're going to get. So anyway, he sent out the text initially and said that the phone was bought on September 14th. He later issued a correction and said, no, what I meant was September 4th. It was a phone bought in an AT&T store on September 4th, not the 14th.
Yeah, I make those mistakes myself. I text things and I have to retext corrections. But if I'm a lawyer sending things to the press, I wouldn't do that. That can make a mess of things, especially for 24 hours. So, okay, real quickly, for the last 2 days, we've been talking about the flowers behind you. And I don't know if you can get your cameraman to zero in. I want to see what the status of the floral bombing has been and the food bombing.
Yes.
And not only that, the protester bombing. So show me, tell me, and let me know how today was.
Okay, so more flowers today. Not a lot of new deliveries, but there were some. You see all the flowers outside. Protesters were back this morning doing their normal thing with the bullhorns every hour for several hours, for 5 minutes, shouting at the house. You see more flowers out here. The parents left this morning for about an hour. So we saw the laundries once this morning, then the dad came out to get the mail. But what I've noticed after being here for 15, 16 days is I'm getting the sense that the dad is starting to get frustrated and just seeming a little more tense. When he left yesterday for the first time, I saw him mouth the F word when he was looking at me and some other reporters. So it seems like the parents are getting a little more tense with the situation.
So, Brian, if I hear you, the words you used were tense and frustrated. I wonder how that compares to the feelings that the Petito family had for 2 weeks while they were looking for their daughter, and the people in the little yellow bungalow behind you wouldn't say a word. I wonder if they felt tense or frustrated or something far more painful. I just, you know, let's just leave that, you know, how the other parents might have felt. Brian Enten, excellent work. Can you please tell your cameraman he did a great job? Photojournalist, if it's a lady.
Yeah.
I always appreciate them, you know, chasing down all the things that we're asking them to show us in the dark. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Ashley.
All right, still to come, thousands of people, thousands are searching for Brian Laundrie across the country. But do they really know what he looks like? After the break, we're going to examine the various looks that he has sported over the years. And the world's best forensic artist is going to show us what he may look like tonight. Welcome back to our special coverage of the manhunt for Brian Laundrie. Wherever Brian is bedding down for the night right about now, he's no dummy. He knows there's an all-out manhunt for him by police and by the public. The FBI is sifting through thousands of tips, while hundreds of thousands of TV screens have his image burned into them all day and all night. The sightings have come in from across the country and, believe it or not, all around the world. Places as far as Canada and Mexico and the Caribbean, most saying that they've seen a man with a shaved head and a beard, like Brian had in that infamous body cam video from August the 12th. It is the last official public image that we have of him. Take a look. But that is not how Brian has always looked. And it is not necessarily what Brian looks like tonight. I want you to take a look at this photo board that we have built using pictures that we have scoured from Brian and Gabby's social media accounts. And it shows images ranging from a completely shaven head and face to a face with a fairly substantial beard. The photos on the top line look really very little like the photos on the bottom line. Kind of looks like a totally different person, actually, if you look closely. Looks like he also could be a whole bunch of different ages. And then check out the photo right smack dab in center square, wearing a hat and sunglasses. And honestly, think about that. Pass him in the store. Completely unrecognizable. And these are just the looks that we've been able to find. What would he look like right now with more than a month of new growth on his head and a beard that's been growing out? Maybe a wig, maybe a different hair color, completely different clothes. Could he, in fact, be hiding among us? To answer that question, I'm joined by Lois Gibson. She has worked as a forensic artist for the Houston Police Department since 1989, and her sketches have helped law enforcement identify more than 1,000 suspects. She also happens to be in the Guinness Book of World Records as the most successful forensic artist, so she is perfect for this story that we want to cover tonight. Lois, thank you so much for being with me tonight. Can I just start with the notion that the last public image that we had in that body cam had him fairly, you know, I think you would say a light scruff, right? So he wasn't fully grown out, but that was about 6 weeks ago. So Ashley, listen, should we really be looking for that guy?
I've been working cases for 39 years, murders, and he is going to get a lot of sun. He's going to lose weight. I don't care how much money he has. If you're on the run for murder, it's hard to eat. It degrades your life. I've seen murderers after they got caught. He also should shave completely. His signature mustache and beard should just go. He's going to get too much sun because he probably is doing a survival thing and he probably doesn't carry a gallon of sunscreen. So he's going to get more tanned. He's going to lose weight. And if he's smart, he'll shave his mustache and beard. I have had murderers, though. They keep the mustache. They love their mustache so much. Even though they robbed a bank and another guy killed four people, they kept the mustache. But I think this guy's young and flexible. Yes, he's going to be like that, clean shaven. And if he's smart, he'll wax his eyebrows. He can even bleach his eyebrows. That's what he should do. I don't know. I believe he's alive. I believe he's been dropped off somewhere or he could survive. But he's going to lose weight. You know, when they catch these murderers, only cops know this. They'll fall asleep because they've been on the run and watch they're caught. And you put them in an interview room, they'll lay down on the floor and just go to sleep. So I've seen people get away from work.
Can I ask you, I'm really interested in the possibility of how quickly, let's just say the neighbor across the street around September 8th, they said that they saw him fairly clean shaven. So if we are about 3-4-ish weeks coming up next week, how quickly would he be able to grow out a beard or grow out mustache or grow, you know, hair on the top of his head if he's got any? Because we've got a few renderings that I want to show while you explain it. And the first rendering that we're going to show you is, you know, if he was clean shaven on the 6th or the 7th or the 8th, we've got a picture of what he might look like with just sort of a shorter looking beard. Let's take a look and then tell me how quickly it grows out as we progress through these.
Facial hair grows 1/8 of an inch a week. So 8 weeks, you're going to get a whole inch. And on the head hair, it grows 1/3 of an inch a month. But I disregard that. I think, okay, with more beard, he's got a signature beard. and a signature mustache that's a lot thicker than that. If he's going to try to do a good disguise and escape, and if he's fighting for his life, he should just shave. I'm sorry. You know, I think we also have a picture
of him with what would look like a mustache and a goatee. I want to see what that would look like, because there are a lot of pictures of him in our face board with him in a sort of just a mustache. That he looks like a completely different person, Lois.
Correct. The facial hair with him, because he's just a standard looking white guy, the facial hair is his signature of his face. And if he's smart, he'll get rid of the mustache and the beard. And also, he could bleach his hair as it grows out. His hair is going to be grown out about 1/3 of an inch. And he could just change the color a little bit and keep it growing out. And that's the best he can do. But hiding from a murder, it'll tear people up.
It's really interesting you mentioned the eyebrows, because when you said that, I realized just how thick and dark they are. Like, they are very signature. But I want people to also be directed to the ears in this picture, because, Lois, I did not realize that ears are like the fingerprint of the face. Everybody's ears are different, and his are really significant, aren't they?
Right. They're the ears are the most complicated object on the surface of the head. They're more complicated than the eyes, lips, or the noses. Obviously, they're like a French horn. There's so many folds and creases. And his are actually, he's got nice looking ears, but he can't do anything about them. So you're going to know those ears. If you see a guy
they're
that
pointed.
Looks like, well, they're a nice shape. I think they're nice, but it doesn't mean he didn't kill anybody. But I look for that ear shape and him clean shaven. And a little tanned, more tanned than that, a lot tanned, like a homeless person, hello, because he's out there in the elements. But also, he is going to lose weight, because no matter how much money or food he can buy, that stuff
he's also he's also got a lot of looks in terms of clothing. Like here, he sort of looks like the homeless guy with the dirty baggy T-shirt. But we've got a grid of all the different kinds of clothing styles that he has worn in pictures that we've gleaned. So let's pop that up, because it goes, you know, if you look across the board, he looks like he's pretty outdoorsy for the most part. But he's also got some nice outdoors clothing. He's got the button down at the beach on the bottom left-hand corner. Then all the way over on the right bottom of the screen is him in a pretty stylish suit. That's that engagement photo that sort of makes you shudder now when you think about where they would end up later. But he's got different looks, and clothes can make a huge difference.
White guy. He's a standard looking white. He looks so plain, he could blend in anywhere. So he just, you know, he looks like he goes all over the map. But I think he's going to be wearing survival clothes. And people that do a lot of camping are going to know what that looks like. But I had a guy that he was on the run from a murder. He killed Lisa Don Hogue, and they found him in Arkansas, and he had forced himself to become morbidly obese, and he bleached his goatee and his mustache and his eyebrows, and he looked awful. But this guy's a good-looking guy. I found out from my son he can wax his eyebrows. I mean, I'm thinking like him, all right? You got to think about your prey to catch him.
Sure.
Let me
wrap it up only by, if I can ask the control room to put that single photo up of him again, because there is a couple of things that people should watch out for. He has fairly crooked front teeth. It's hard to see him smiling in a lot of pictures, but we did see this one. And look at those teeth. His front teeth are slightly off to the side.
Yeah, his maxillary lateral incisors is up a little higher than, I went to dental school. Right, he has a little bit of unusual dentition.
Okay, and then the other thing is, I just want people to know that there's a picture we have of him wearing a shark tooth in a lot of pictures. And so if you see this man with those teeth and those ears and maybe the goatee and maybe the beard, but definitely there is a shark tooth that he was wearing. Do we have that picture of him wearing the shark tooth? There you go. See it hanging there? It looks like the shark tooth on the shark. Lois, I have to cut it there, but I want you to come back and do more of this on another night, because I think we could dig in even deeper.
I'm going to do a picture of what I think he would look like. And I've got a lot of great intuition, and I'm going to do that and get back with you.
Lois Gibson, great to have you. Thank you for that. I want to switch gears for a minute, because my next guest had the cover. He had the cover story for People Magazine on the Gabby Petito investigation last week, and he has done it again. He's got the cover story on People Magazine this week. It's the Murdoch family mystery. And after the break, Steve Hilling is going to be here with all of the new secrets just unveiled from both stories. back to Banfield and our special coverage of the manhunt for Brian Laundrie. I am joined by Steve Helling, senior writer with People Magazine and host of Murder Made Me Famous on Reels. Steve has been covering the Gabby Petito investigation since the beginning. He had last week's cover story highlighting the years-long volatile relationship between Gabby and Brian, and he's done it again. He also got this week's cover, too, but on the Murdoch saga in South Carolina, where he has unearthed surprising new details about Alex and Maggie Murdoch, including Maggie's trip to see a divorce lawyer just 6 weeks before she was murdered. But before we go there, Steve, I want to drill down on today's developments in the hunt for Brian Laundrie. And I didn't even expect this last minute development to come out. It was that body cam video from Moab. It's a different angle, but we see and we heard more. We heard Gabby. It was heartbreaking. We heard her say, "I hit him first." And we, you know, heard her talk about Brian hitting her. I just wanted to touch base with you on that, especially since your lead story, cover story for People last week, you talked to all those friends of theirs who said it was just the most volatile relationship.
It was a volatile relationship. It was an immature relationship. And, you know, interesting, you know, like you said, seeing the same footage from a different angle can show you all sorts of new things. And just watching her say, you know, "Oh, well, I hit him first," or hearing her say that, you know, is unfortunately, we've heard that many times before. Somebody who is, you know, being physically abused comes up with a reason why they were being physically abused. They give an excuse to the abuser. We didn't see the whole thing, but, you know, clearly we, you know, there were witnesses that called 911 that said he was hitting her. So her saying, "Well, I hit him first," does not necessarily absolve him from what he did next. So it's really interesting to hear her, and it's heartbreaking in many ways.
And just, I mean, just looking at her body language, she's slumped and she's so distraught. You could just see that she's been crying. "I don't know this young woman." And I can tell that her eyes are red and swollen. She's just, her hands are clamped. She is just in about the worst way anyone could be. Look at that. I mean, this is, she's right there describing him grabbing her face and how then she goes and says, "And I hit him first." It's just, it upsets me even to think about this, that 2 weeks later she'd be dead. I wanted to also touch base with you on the FBI showing back up at the Laundrie's house today. Because I know that you cover these stories all the time, what I saw differently, I don't know if you saw it, was that when you want to get an article of clothing to help the Bloodhounds search for your missing son, that's not how the police do it. It's not how Ed Smart was giving, you know, items of Elizabeth Smart's clothing to help track Elizabeth and find Elizabeth. They don't go barging into your camper and barging into your house. That didn't just didn't sound like the lawyer's account.
No. You know, obviously, every time that you and I have dealt with so many missing people, and, you know, when somebody goes missing, their loved ones are pleading for help in any way that they can. And the FBI could say to them, "I want every shirt that they've ever worn," and the family will give it to them without any question. You know, so to have the FBI having to barge in to take something is not what you expect when the family is cooperating with the FBI.
Yeah. And then, you know, Brian Enton said they may have been leaving something as well. But the whole thing is weird because it was 2 weeks ago they were there taking boxes and boxes and boxes out. So it seems just, it all seems very curious. I'm not going to lie. And then what do you make, with only a minute left to go on this block? And I'm going to keep you here if you can. What do you make of this notion that Mrs. Laundrie, Roberta Laundrie, seemed to be making changes to her reservations at that campground, the DeSoto campground, the day before Brian came home, and the changes did not include one Gabby Petito?
Yes, exactly. You know, I'm always very careful to not say, "Oh, you know, his parents must have known." I don't know what they knew, when they knew it. You know, and there's a million reasons why they may have thought that Gabby wasn't coming back. You know, maybe he called them and said, "You know, we broke up." Who knows? But, you know, the bottom line is that It's all very suspicious, and it's something that I assume law enforcement is spending a lot of time trying to figure out. What did the Laundry family know, and when did they know it, and, you know, how did they help their son, and did they do anything wrong in doing so?
Yeah. Hey, by the way, you and I are both in the business of, you know, doing stuff on TV about crime mm-hmm. stories. And that's what Dog the Bounty Hunter, you know, has been doing for a living for a long time. Were you surprised to hear Brian Enten's report at the beginning of this show that Dog the Bounty Hunter had that business at the campground and then the FBI got it?
I'm going to admit, when I heard, when Dog the Bounty Hunter is banging on the door, I'm like, oh, gosh, really? Now the circus is beginning. But you know, sometimes it does take somebody with a different motivation to kind of get us somewhere. And at this point, we're just looking for Brian Laundry, and I don't care who comes out of the woodwork to try and help find him, as long as we can find him.
I know. I want Nancy Grace to go and bang on that door next. I'm not kidding. And I know you and I would just be like, I'd be there with her just to watch,
exactly.
Right, in person. Okay, Steve Helly, don't go anywhere, my friend. You're so good at this. After the break, I'm going to dig into your brand new cover story on the Murdoch mystery. Could it be, Steve Helly, that the iron-fisted grip they have had on the Lowcountry just might be starting to loosen? Well, the Gabby Petito case and the ongoing manhunt have dominated the news headlines and those newscasts right across the country, not to mention the internet that's also kind of blown up over this. The Murdoch mysteries, and yes, I said mysteries plural, they have not gone away. Do not worry, you have not missed anything big, but this does happen to be a significant day. Not long after the killing of Maggie Murdoch and her younger son, Paul, that was back in early June, the husband and father, Alex, and the surviving son, Buster, they announced something pretty interesting, a $100,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and the conviction of the killers. For reasons that are still entirely unclear, they set a deadline, which is today, September 30th. I have never heard of a reward deadline, but they did, and it's today. You're probably aware that an awful lot has happened between those June murders and today, the key word here being awful. But what hasn't happened is this. No tips. No tips have led to an arrest, in this case anyway. And according to Murdoch's lawyer, nobody has claimed the big payout. And by my clock, you got about an hour and 15 minutes. Murdoch, of course, surrendered to the police 2 weeks ago on charges stemming from his bungled scheme to get himself killed for the insurance money, 10 million big ones. And tonight, that is one of six, count them, six open criminal investigations centered on involving or somehow connected to the Murdoch family. To be fair, we do not know who is being investigated in the 2015 death of Stephen Smith, the young man known to the younger Murdochs, but we do know police opened a criminal probe this year based on something they found in the Paul and Maggie investigation. And on the subject of Maggie, People Magazine is reporting tonight that 6 weeks before she was shot to death, Mrs. Murdoch consulted a divorce lawyer in Charleston. The person who scooped that and wrote that is a senior writer for People Magazine, Steve Helly. He is still with me. So I know you've got a lot more to share on the findings from the Lowcountry, Steve Helly, but that's really disquieting that she was off to see a divorce lawyer, because we'd also heard that she'd started digging into the forensics of the family finances, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've heard this, and I want to be very clear that even going to see a divorce lawyer does not mean that, you know, there's no connection that we know between that meeting with a divorce lawyer and her death. We don't know any cause and effect there. But what we do know for sure is that, yes, the end of April of this year, she went to see a divorce attorney in Charleston, which is about an hour and 15 minutes away from where they live, you know, and the divorce lawyer had a consultation with her and basically said, you know, how much money does your family have? And her answer was, I don't really know. And so he said, well, you're going to have to start figuring that out. And so, you know, she started, you know, asking some questions. We know that for sure. We don't know how many questions she asked. We don't know what she found out during that time. But, you know, when somebody is ending a marriage, as we all know, one of the things that everybody figures out is, okay, what are the marital assets? So it's not out of the ordinary for her to start trying to figure that out.
So the other thing that I thought was really interesting in your reporting, again, in People magazine that hits the shelves tomorrow, the newsstands tomorrow, is that the co-workers of Alex had noticed something a little different in their relationship. What was it?
Well, they had always been a very loving couple. They'd always, you know, they'd have lunch together. They would, you know, she was a fixture. She would just come to the office. I mean, she didn't live far from the office at all. It was a 10-minute drive to get there. So, you know, she would swing by to see her husband. And that stopped happening. And it seemed like things were cooling off at holiday parties and things like that. You know, they would both show up and they would mingle, but they wouldn't mingle together like they used to. You know, that happens. You know, marriages have these ebbs and flows, these ups and downs, and they were clearly in a down area of their marriage, you know, before she died.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not coming to lunch with your husband and that's a normal thing, right. Okay, maybe you found a new hobby or something. But if that's happening while you're driving an hour away to find a lawyer, well, your husband, you know, has an entire law firm in town. You're clearly trying to do it quietly and you're looking into family finances. That sounds pretty darn serious. I just can't imagine that it would have something to do with the deaths. You know, her death and her child's death. I have always had a really tough time with the frenzy online. He did it. Alex did it. I mean, you just don't kill your wife and son. It just doesn't happen, right?
And that's why, you know, I'd like to be very careful in talking about this to say, we don't know that this caused anything. It's just a fact that happened, you know, and the interesting thing is that Alex Murdaugh's people have not really spoken out about a lot of the things that he's alleged to have done. You know, the taking of the money and they're really not talking about a lot of things. But the minute that we reported that, you know, hey, this, you know, she went to see this divorce lawyer, they said, oh, no, their marriage was fine. Their marriage was solid. They didn't say that, no, she didn't go see the divorce lawyer, but they did say that they had a solid marriage. You know,
By the way, Steve, to that point, I love that you brought that up because I grabbed this statement from Amanda Lovejoy. She's the spokesperson for Alex Murdaugh, and this is her quote. We have reviewed many years of text messages on Alex's phone and the conversations between Alex and Maggie portray a very loving relationship. And all I can say to that is if you're a spokesperson for someone, are you really investigating their text messages? That just seemed odd.
That was
to
an
me.
Odd
maybe
one.
Maybe I'm crazy on that one. Okay, when we come back after the break, Steve, when you went and found people who were close to the Murdaughs and were talking about them, I thought, that's got to be a typo because nobody in the Lowcountry talks about the Murdaughs. It's like it's like paralysis when their name comes up. Everyone's terrified. And it sounds like that grip that they have had on the Lowcountry may be really going away. So I'm dying to find out what you have found out from, you know, people in social circles. When we come back, Mr. Steve Helling is going to drop that little bit right here. Welcome back. I'm not going to say he did the impossible, but my guest Steve Helling did almost that for the brand new issue of People magazine. He got people in the Lowcountry to talk about the Murdaugh family. Oh, and he got two covers 2 weeks in a row. So, okay, first of all, I'm not sure which one is the bigger feat, but I'm going to go for the sake of this program with the Murdaugh story. Steve, no one has been talking about the Murdaughs. So what did you hear? And I don't know if you can tell us who it was or at least characterize who it was.
So the first time I went to, you know, that area of South Carolina, I got a lot of doors slammed in my face. I couldn't even go into the local Piggly Wiggly and get anybody to talk to me. You know, nobody wanted to talk about the family. And, you know, anybody who wouldn't give their name. And they're like, oh, I'm afraid. I don't want to, you know, everybody was afraid to. And, you know, I was thrown out of their law firm. They just didn't want to talk to me. The second time I went after the, you know, after Alex's weird, you know, shooting incident, suddenly everybody was a little more talkative. You know, even people at the law firm were willing to at least give me some information on background, and you know how that works. You know, and it was interesting that nobody wanted to talk, and then suddenly some people were ready to talk. I think they realized, okay, he can't hurt us anymore. And, you know, I'm not trying to classify Alex as a bully, but that was the term that was used a lot, that, you know, he just got what he wanted when he wanted, and you don't cross the Murdoch family. And so nobody wanted to. Now people are saying, oh, what's the worst that they can do? Nobody's going to do anything to me if I talk a little bit to People magazine.
Well, I'll tell you, there was one line that really stood out. Holy Moses, that one said, behind all those black ties and fancy dresses were some pretty miserable people. And that is not from an outsider, is it?
No, that isn't. And just giving credit where it's due, my wonderful colleague Casey Baker actually got that quote. And, you know, it was interesting because, you know, you look at this family and it looked like they all have it together and it looks like they're all happy and everything's great. And everything isn't great. They were miserable in many, many ways.
Even though the spokesperson says everything was fine. Did you make anything of this notion that there was the reward money that if you didn't, you know, hand over the tips, you lose out after midnight tonight? That's 1 hour and 2 minutes from now.
Well, I thought that was strange. And I thought, you know, you never put an expiration date on a reward. And now I think, well, maybe they don't have the $100,000 to give. So,
yeah, well, if you heard that hearing, right, Dick Harpootlian, yeah, former state senator, now lawyer for Alex Murdoch, said, this is not a man of means. And he said that it was insurance paying for his rehab. So, Listen, he's going to owe a lot of money to a lot of people if a lot of people get their way with what they're alleging. We haven't even heard from SLED yet on whether some of these charges against him or allegations against him are going to become charges. There's still so much more. Steve, the cover is amazing.
Thank you.
I can't believe you did it. Can I just ask you 10 seconds? 10 seconds. Sympathy, relief, glee. How do the people feel down there about this?
A lot of glee. A lot of glee, which is unfortunate, but that's what they feel.
Yeah, you know, it's the schadenfreude thing, and I'm never happy about that. I don't care who you are. People are people, and humans are humans, and I don't wish this on anyone. But I sure love it when you come on our show. Will you do this again? Promise me?
Absolutely, of course.
Hold you to it if you say
it
on TV.
Send me a text, and we'll do it again. So.
Thank you, Steve Helen. Great work. Congrats on the cover, as always. Tomorrow, we are going to continue to cover this story. Make sure you tune in, because the folks of Live PD are going to join me as well, and Sheriff Mark Lamb from Pinal County. Yeah, guess what? Brian Laundrie's on his radar, too. Oh, you got to wait tomorrow for that.